podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Now then, we have got a new sponsor, and it's slightly unconventional, isn't it? Because the previous sponsors we've had have usually been, you know, beers and things like that. And
swimwear partner we've had.
Correct. Correct. Well, this one, it's interesting. So we got these packages through the post, and basically, I mean, there's no other way of saying it, is there, lads? It's basically for...
I think the best way to phrase it is a package came through the post to tackle your package.
Correct, yes. It's basically to trim your balls. Brooksy, I can just see him. So we're recording this podcast on Zoom, and I can see Brooksy, and he's... Well, you not went to do that. He's just picked the boxer shorts out of his box that we got, and he's put them on his head. We've all got our Manscaped T-shirts on, because that's who have sent us the boxers. And, I mean, it's great. They've got, like, these amazing little trimmers, and then they've got, like, some talc and some ball deodorant. It's great. But I'm slightly worried, though, because I've used it, and it's brilliant. Brooksy, It looks like you've been using it on your face.
Ball deodorant's interesting, though. I've not used that before. Smells lovely,
it's a bit,
isn't it?
Bit of a tingle, Brooksy. I like it.
I like using that that mint shower gel on in the other room. I think it's important, isn't it, to have a decent set of grooming gear for your chin and your nether regions.
Yeah, I want to know, did you do nether regions after you used it on your face? Or was it before?
Two separate trimmers, mate. Two separate trimmers. I'm hygienic. And I've gone for the half Wolverine now, haven't I?
It's nice. Looks good. I mean, you know, obviously, I mean, we aren't going to expose ourselves on Zoom. Look at that. What's that? What's that you've got in your hand?
Ball toner.
Ball toner.
Good podcast.
It is good. It's a blooming good job, I tell you that. But yeah, really good.
Brooksy, can you actually put some of the success that you've had with the bat down to making sure your box is comfortable because you are very well groomed in that region?
It's a valid question.
I thought you were going to say, can you put it on now? And I was like, no, I'm not going to rummage with myself on my podcast. I mean, I could put it down to that if it would help the sponsors.
Always.
Well, Manscaped is good. So when you were manscaping, Chris, how did you find it?
An experience. I think it's one of those things you've got to just embrace, and you know if the sea's really cold, you've just got to jump in, haven't you? You don't dip your toe. You dip your toe, and then you just got to embrace it.
I wondered where that was going.
The newspaper it came with and the instructions, it was like a full-on experience. So now I really enjoyed it, and I would be recommending it to everyone I know.
Yeah, well, if you're listening to this podcast, you can go on to Manscaped website, and we've got a Barmy Army code, Chris, haven't we? For anybody who's listening to this podcast, you can get some money off.
We have, James, yeah. Like we said, go to manscaped.com and you get 20% off plus free shipping with code Barmy Army in capitals. Very simply, Barmy Army in capitals. The package you get when it arrives is absolutely outstanding. You get a shaver, you get some deodorant, you get your own wash bag, you get a t-shirt, you get some really comfy boxer shorts. I would highly recommend it to everyone. It's a really fun, unique gift as well, so be sure to check it out.
Perfect. And also, I mean, I've just got to say, glowing review of mine, you could eat your dinner off it. So that's all I'm just going to leave it at that.
That was
said,
was it?
so manscaped.com, Barmy Army. Welcome along to the Shackles Are Off podcast, the UK's number one cricket podcast, according to our pals at Apple. Welcome back to our loyal followers, and thank you for downloading and subscribing and sharing and getting in touch and stuff as well. We have had some correspondence, gentlemen. Before we talk about Brooks's success and England's success and who our guest is for this week, we've had an email from Shaylen. Morning, lads. I just wanted to say I've been enjoying your podcast so far. Well, good for you. Starting with Hoggy's one and Simon Jones's one now, jumping around. Reaching out to let you know I'm listening all the way over in sunny Fiji. Keep up the good work. And that's from Shaylen. So thank you very much, Shaylen, for getting in touch. Sunny Fiji.
Oh, man.
That's pretty cool.
Wow. That's class.
That's cool.
What a bloke.
So, you've...
I've never actually been to Fiji, but it's on my bucket list. Amazing place to be. Have you? You've been there, haven't you?
I have, yeah. I did 8 weeks volunteering in a rural Fijian village, teaching all the kids English and trying to teach them a bit of maths and PE as well. So it was...
Hang on. You're teaching someone how to speak English?
Yeah, apparently.
I know, yeah.
And maths.
It was quite funny because I actually taught them some Sheffield Wednesday football songs when I was out there, because you had to teach them a song. Everyone's teaching like S Club and everything. I taught them Hi Ho Silver Line and made them sing Sheffield Wednesday. So
in Fiji now, there's going to be a few dozen kids walking around with a dodgy Yorkshire accent.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit before my Barmy Army time.
Big fan of Kevin Pressman. Love it.
I'm going to go back and teach him some Barmy Army songs, because it really is a stunning place. And I got chatting to Shaylen on email, and he was just saying he's actually plays cricket in Fiji. What a place to go and play cricket.
That's so cool. And
I know they love their rugby over there, but yeah, the beach cricket would be pretty good as well, wouldn't it?
Brilliant.
Yeah, mental. Absolutely mental. Thanks for getting in touch. And I hope you're listening on a beach. That's how I'm imagining it anyway.
That's very nice. Very well-travelled person. I enjoy that, Fiji. Talking of well-travelled, by the way, our guest, Geraint Jones, well-travelled himself. Nice little segue. See what I did there? That's why you get paid the big bucks.
Greggy, that is why you get paid to read the news at 1 a.m.
Seamless.
On the BBC.
It was, wasn't it? Geraint Jones, born in Papua New Guinea. I've never spoken to him before, but just sort of doing a bit of research for this pod. I know it's unbelievable we actually do research, but he, what a cool, like, sort of upbringing and kind of start into cricket, and a bit of a late bloomer as well, which is pretty interesting. So be good to get the thoughts from Geraint. But let's talk about you, Brooksy. I know you actually sort of get a bit embarrassed for this, but we're recording this the day after Somerset booked their place in the Bob Willis Trophy final at Lords. You're playing against Essex, and well done, Brooksy. You and the Somerset lads have been absolutely class.
Hi, mate, yeah. How good's that? 3 or 4 months ago, I didn't think we'd play any cricket. So to sit here on the brink of a Lords final for a trophy. Unfortunately, we won't be having any supporters in there, I don't think. But yeah, it's crazy. And it's brilliant, though, like how quickly, because with not very many games, you've got to get your form going quickly. And we've thrown ourselves right into it, had some tough games. But yeah, we've rode to Lords. It's 2 weeks' time.
Serious, yeah. Serious effort from you, boys. And we have to mention the fact that you were absolutely flying, top of the averages, or you must have been up there averaging 45. And then what happened? You got one.
Yeah, well, I've run out of luck. I don't know. Like, to fail once in five, I'm quite well there, haven't I?
You have, yeah.
I'm really not that very good at batting, am I? So a bowler should be able to get me out if he bowls me a decent enough nut. which Dylan Pennington did to me yesterday, schnicked me off. But I was disappointed because Tom Lamonby was at the other end, and he was on 100 and something, and he batted beautifully. Keep an eye out for him, definitely, for the future.
Fantastic, yeah. And I mean, look, Brooksy, by the way, 4 matches, 13 wickets, average of under 17. Love that. Good stuff. All that gym work that you were doing when you were punching the boxing pads and stuff,
really,
you know.
Good bowling attack, though, mate.
Great bowling attack. Well, good stuff. All the best. All the best for that Lords final. We'll obviously keep you updated on here.
So that's the two best teams as well, isn't it? So,
oh yeah, 100%.
You guys in Essex, so it's going to be a spectacle, and hopefully you'll have everyone. It must be on Sky. Everyone will be tuning in. I reckon it'll get some good viewers.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I was hoping it would be. The rumours of it clashing with the IPL or something, but I know Test Match Special will be there from radio commentary, and there'll be local commentary as well. I really hope it is on TV, because it could be good viewing. Two decent teams playing each other.
If it's not, Brooksy, I'll go down to Lords and stream it on the Barmy Army Facebook.
Yes, good idea.
One day.
Perfect. Good stuff.
Geraint Jones, Brooksy.
Have you played against him?
Played much with him, against him?
Never played with him. I played against him when he was at Kent, and I played against him when he was at Gloucester, when I was at Northants. And then when I was at Yorkshire, he was at Gloucester. He, I think in his final game or his final season, he got a man of the match at Lords. And you all know, did he get 50 at Lords in a cup win against Surrey? But yeah, I played against him a couple of times. Really nice chap, was a good player. I didn't play against him in his pomp, but he was still a dangerous batter to bolt. Very good keeper. He's a fireman now, isn't he? So I'm looking forward to talking to him. He should have some good stories for us.
Yeah, he's got a cool life. Yeah, looking forward to speaking to him. I'll tell you what, let's talk to him a little bit more. And like we already mentioned as well, manscaped.com. As a sponsor in our podcast as well, so do check that out. Perhaps even whilst you're having a little listen along to this,
Greggy, are you going to be asking anyone to eat your dinner? Anyway, onto the podcast
with Geraint Jones on The Shackles Are Off. So, first of all, thanks so much for joining us, Geraint, as well. I mean, I don't really know where to start, to be honest, because a lot of our guests, they come through that traditional route of 15, 16, playing county cricket as a junior. They then play for England, and then they play a bit of the county stuff, and then they finish, right? That is not exactly, like, not what you've done. You've done it a really sort of different way, and it's quite interesting. So, you're born in Papua New Guinea, which is quite common knowledge, and we'll come on to that later on. But then, you know, you came over to play club cricket from Australia because that's where you were living, and it all, you know, tell us about it.
Yeah, it could take a while.
No, it's great.
Yeah, so born in Papua New Guinea, and then my family had 10 years there, basically throughout the 70s. And then in early 80s, moved to Oz when I was six. That's where I learned cricket. That's where I sort of found the game and fell in love with it. You know, learnt the basics, learnt how to play the sort of the Aussie way with the way that they do it. And then I first came to the UK actually in 95 as an 18-year-old and played at Lydney near, and so had a great year there, scored loads of runs and planned to come back pretty quickly, but then went back to Oz and things went quite well with the cricket. Got invited to be an associate scholar down at the Cricket Academy in Adelaide. So went down there for a few weeks, did a bit of that. By that point, I'd left school, so I had to get a job. And so was working and playing a bit of cricket on the weekends. Actually, I'd been through catering college, so I can silver serve, I can flambé, I can mix cocktails, all that sort of. But then I realised actually playing cricket and then having to race off to get to work wasn't really working, actually. I don't know, the Barmy Army guys would probably sort of know. South Bank in Brisbane, you guys know as well. South Bank in Brisbane. So there was a curry spot house down the bottom end of it, Taste of India. That's where I worked for a few years. Yeah. So it was quite cool. But it didn't work with cricket. And then, so I got a regular job. I went and worked for a computer company, putting all computer components together for people to assemble them, and then I'd ship them off. But then cricket was going quite well. I got involved with the Queensland Academy of Sport, played a few Sec 11 games. But then at that point, sort of Ian Healy was coming to the end, so he was still playing a bit. Wade Seckham was the keeper for Queensland, unbelievable keeper. So I sort of pretty much knew that path was fairly blocked. So I just started to think differently. And that's when coming back to the UK sort of became an option. And in 98, that's what I did. Went to Clevedon in Somerset. Went from there. Had a year and ended up staying. Met my wife. She claims my whole cricket career because, if it wasn't for her, she... gone back to Oz. So, and then, yeah, so went a bit, playing club cricket, moved to Abergavenny, so a good friend of mine. And my best man, Owen Dawkins, who's the coach at Gloucester, batting coach.
Yeah.
I moved in with his parents, lived in a little room, and his mum actually helped me write a letter to the counties to basically ask for a trial. And at that point, that was 99, so what was I, 23?
Right.
And then I had a couple get back to me. Kent was one of them. But actually the guy who, the coach at that time, lost my letter and lost all my details. But luckily he knew Owen. So he threw Owen, he got in touch with me to say, really embarrassed, lost his details, but we want to have a, want him to come up for a trial. And I remember the bottom of the high street, Abergavenny, in a red phone box, making the phone call to ring up the coach. Say, when do you want me to come? What do I have to do? And, and then went back up. I was working in a pharmacy at that point, doing a bit of stuff to be a pharmacy technician. Everyone thinks I'm a qualified pharmacist. Not true. I wish, but yeah, not true. All I've done is learnt how to count a few pills and mix a few creams. That's about it.
Because I've seen that. That was on your Wikipedia page, I'll be honest. I've seen it. And I thought, trained pharmacist. And, like you've just said, doing all the waiting on stuff. Like the most qualified cricketer in the world.
You've got a serious CV for someone that made it in the game as well. Incredible.
Quality.
Yeah. Serious experience.
So good. So look, when you start at Kent then, so I'm guessing when you came over to play club cricket initially, you were probably thinking, right, going to get up and at them, going to get a county contract. I'm guessing that was probably your aim. But then when you actually got it, that must have been really cool, just get it in Kent as well, where you'd have played your club cricket and stuff.
Not really, to be honest, in terms of the county stuff. I came over with an idea of going to uni, and then it just evolved. So it's sort of the way I've just drifted along and things have happened, to be honest. It's, coming over and, no real intention, and it just so happened to be that did quite well. And through talking to Owen and his parents, actually, because Mark Wallace, the Glamorgan keeper for all those years, he was from the little village where I was staying, and he was in contact with Kent, and it just came about that they were looking for a keeper. So then I thought, oh, I'll give it a go. And yeah, it went from there. And I think the one defining thing that happened in my trial was spinner came on to bowl, and first ball, I just ran down and whacked it over his head. And the coach happened to be watched, because I was in a trial with a load of 16 and 17-year-olds, and here I was, 23, and they were all crapping themselves, not moving out the crease, and I've just run down and whacked it. And the coach said to me after, he said, well, if you hadn't have done that, I probably wouldn't have even looked too much further at you.
Wow.
Wow.
Take some cojones. I love that.
That's it stuck with my whole career, to be honest. You see me get out at Edgbaston Trent Bridge when I tried to run down and hit Warnie out of nothing.
Yeah, I remember. I was just gonna say
that's quality. So who was knocking around in that Kent
true style, though, didn't you?
Who was knocking around in that Kent dressing room then, Geraint? So Rob Key, trying to think of some others, like sort of prominent sort of big names in the game. What was that environment like?
It was a bit of a transition time. So 2000 was when I basically had a year on trial. I was still working full time in Abergavenny in the pharmacy, and then travelling up to wherever Kent were playing. And I remember in one of my first second team games, Steve Marsh, who played Kent for years and years, Martin McCaig was about. I got out for a duck actually in the trial match. Mark McCaig bowled it and Dean Headley caught me. So who else was about? Matthew Fleming, he was about. Mark Elam, Min Patel. So that was a sort of era. And then there was the new guys of Keezy, Matt Walker, who's the coach, Dave Fulton. So that was a sort of the guys that I sort of did the trial, played with, and then ended up playing quite a few years with.
Quality. And you must have felt fairly comfortable to sort of go in with some of those whizzly sort of old pros, really sort of gritty county pros, aren't they? Some of the names you've just listed. So coming in, come over from Australia, playing club cricket, you know, were they thinking, who's this chancer? Or were they, you know, instantly straight away embrace you into it?
Oh, they were brilliant with me, to be fair. I think being a little bit older as well. Yeah, but they were in terms of they'd been playing a long time. So they were at a relaxed point in their career. I wasn't really a threat. Marshy had given, you know, he knew he was at the back end. So me coming in and doing it, it wasn't. But it provided some interesting times on some second 11 trips, that's for sure, with that lot. Yeah, me sort of thinking, right, okay, and then watching, you know, watching them do their stuff on and off the pitch. So it was, it was good fun.
I can imagine. But how did England come about then? So obviously through your good play, obviously, but a lot of the players now, they have that under 19s Lions kind of progression. It's like a little bit of a conveyor belt. So that must have been really different for you, that when you kind of got the nudge. Just tell us about how that came about.
So it was in my first year. So 2003 was my first year full-time, really, in the first team for Kent. Did quite well. And again, you recognise these moments where you look back and I played against Essex and Nasser was playing. And he got a double century in the match. But I also, I scored runs in both innings, and he then went back and spoke to Duncan Fletcher about me, and sort of, I think that's what helped put me on the radar, and from there, yeah. But that first year, I'd taken over from Paul Nixon. They'd basically, over the previous 2 years, I'd set myself a bit of a goal. At the end of my 2 year contract, Kent would need to make a choice, Nico or myself, and if they kept Nico, I would have performed so well in the second team playing against all the counties that one of them would have snapped me up. And, you know, and Kent made the choice to keep me. And in the first match we played, it was against Leicester. Nico had gone back to Leicester. He had batted first and got 100. And I was like, oh, brilliant. Yeah, just what I need. But I got 100 of myself. I remember Dave Masters dropped me on the boundary. Not like I was nudging it for one to try bring up my 100. He dropped me over the boundary for six to bring it up. So it was, so from there, that really gave me a boost. And the rest of the season, I scored a load of runs, and that's what put me on the radar. And cricket's massively about a bit of luck and opportunity at the right time. And I just happened to come on the scene at the perfect timing when Alex Stewart had finished. So they were, you know, there's a bit of thing about the keeper and who was taking over. So it was just brilliant timing for me. And I happened to back that up with some scores and went away on my first tour after first year really playing.
But there were some blooming good keepers there, wasn't there? Because it's Chris Reedy. Go on, Brooksy, sorry.
Sorry, mate. Yeah, the signal's a bit delayed. Was it ever on your radar that you... have a crack playing for England, or are you just playing county cricket? Like, I've got a job, see what happens.
Yeah, no, it wasn't really, to be honest. It was, like I said, it just sort of flowed through, and it happened so quick, I didn't get time to think about it in a way. Whereas guys coming through the system, like you mentioned, through their own county academy, and then they play some England 19s, and now they go away on the England Young Lions and stuff. It becomes pretty quickly on their radar. But for me, I was just having an amazing time, and you know, things were happening quickly. You know, I trialed, I got a contract, I then got first team gig, then I got, you know, then I got picked for England. So it didn't really. I just went with the flow. Got a phone call, you fancy going to Bangladesh. I was like, all right, yeah, let's do it.
Got nothing else on. I'll have a go over there. What was that like then, Geraint, on your first away tour? Obviously, the step up in standard and the touring life with England, which was becoming a really disciplined, drilled team at the time, I guess. It was getting more professional year on year. Did you enjoy that?
Yeah, I loved it because Yeah, you know, just so on that first tour, I sat next to Nasser Hussain on the plane on the way there, and I annoyed the absolute hell out of him because I thought, all right, I need a watch. I didn't really have a watch, so I just bought myself a fairly cheap little watch, and I spent the flight trying to work out how. So it was beeps and beeps, and yeah, Nasser sort of tolerated it, and but eventually he asked me to stop fiddling with a watch, and. So NASA was on there, Mark Butcher, Graham Thorpe, so some, again, that different era, and then, but there was also Trez, Vorney, Ashley Giles, these guys coming through. So I suppose when I think about it, I've sort of, that transition happened at Kent and then at England, but it was an unbelievable journey to be play a year and then go on a trip to Bangladesh. And I suppose that's where I was a bit on the trip. I pretty much knew I wasn't played. Reedy was in the team. So Bangladesh, everyone else was staying in the hotel and having chips, beans and eggs. And, you know, there was a restaurant around the corner and Bay of Bengal has got these unbelievable prawns. So I was having prawns and getting stuck in, and everyone else was like, I can't do that. I've got to, just in case it goes through you. And I was like, well, I'm not going to play, so enjoy the seafood.
That's so good. But look, you know, some good keepers there, weren't there? Because Chris Reid obviously was fantastic. You ended up nicking the gloves off him. And James Foster as well, who was like, well, I mean, one of the best ever, really, like standing behind the stumps. So that must have been quite good. You know, there's that cliche, isn't there, where they say, oh, it spurs each other on. Was that the case with you? Did it spur you on a little bit, you know, when you're all practicing together and all that kind of thing, or knowing that they were probably nipping at your heels when you did get the gloves?
Yeah, it did, because I knew they were much better than me with the gloves. And it did spur me on to, you know, and watching Reedy keep and how easy it would make it look. You know, and Fozzie was a bit before me. That's sort of who would, I think Fozzie went on a tour to, must have been to Australia and then possibly New Zealand and
India, and he then, did yeah, as well, so, yeah. You
know, went with Reedy. And so I, you know, again, I watching Reedy, I was a bit naive to it all. I knew of him, but I suppose I hadn't watched a huge amount. But then, you know, just watching him do his work, and we was good. There was never really a rivalry. We knew that we were both there to try and play, but he was brilliant with me in terms of working together to, you know, to be the best we could. And all the way along, I think people would probably love it if I said, oh, he's an absolute joker, he wouldn't even talk to me. But he wasn't. He's, you know, Reedy's an absolute legend, and he helped me with that transition. And I always knew that I'd be under pressure with the gloves because of the quality that we were behind and wanting to get there.
West Indies was your first tour where you actually kind of played, wasn't it? Was that the one where you first got the gloves? That brilliant tour where everything seemed to happen and Lara got his 400 and Simon Jones was in the side, and that sounded so good. I mean, you know, what an experience that must have been for you.
Yeah, I was on a party bus for the first four tests, and then they told me I was playing the last one. but again, I... There was a moment there, so I'd looked at this tour schedule and I knew Reedy would start, and I looked at it and there was a tour match in between the fourth and the fifth test, and I sort of said, well, that could be my opportunity. If, depending on how Reedy's gone, if he's smashing it, fair play, but if there's a bit of doubt, I've got that window there. And I got bowled off a no ball early on in my innings. And then I went on to get 60 odd. So I think, again, that moment where getting the runs at the right time. Gave me the chance. And then Vorney came up to me in the nets before the match and walked around the back of the nets and sort of said, right, you're playing the next one. And cacked myself and then thought, oh, here we go. But West Indies, what a place to go that is. You know, like I said, like some of those, watching people, the older guys celebrate wins. And yeah, I remember going through, is it The Gap? Where's that? Is that
The Gap, Barbados.
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 we had little minibuses, and we've got Butch hanging out the window with the beatbox going, NASA banging on windows, and I just thought, whoa, this is you know. So it was just loads of fun, and that for me was like, okay, yeah, this is touring, watching these guys who've played so many test matches still enjoy a win and enjoy where we were. And so yeah, it was pretty amazing. And then yeah, my first test, I pretty well could have sat down and watched Lara get 400, because that was, you know, what an introduction that is. Have 2.5 days with you know, in the dirt. Brilliant.
Yeah. Hongi told us about that. He said he conveniently was a bit ill for the day that and Gareth Batty had to come in and bowl his overs for him and went for about 200. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I'm a bit dirty with Trez, because I was on for a world record, so the amount of runs in an innings without a bye being conceded, and then they brought Trez on to bowl, and he bowled some filth and threw one down the leg side, and I got called a bye.
Oh no, you're kidding.
Yeah, so but yeah, you know, it was all good. That was my introduction to Test cricket, a legend of the game scoring 400 and spending 200 plus overs in the dirt,
and 100 in New Zealand after that as well. Like, what was that feeling like? Because, I mean,
yeah,
you know.
That was when we returned. So that was at Headingley. What a place that is to play, by the way, with the stands there. And, you know, when you're sitting there watching the bat and you just look out and you see Superman, you see all the wrestlers. You know, I love that side of it. And, so to score 100 in my third test match was amazing, incredible feeling. Probably a big regret is I didn't get another one. I should have in that Ashes series in 05, but I peaked too soon.
Well, not quite. I mean, come on. Ashes 05, I mean, the build-up and everything was just incredible. And I bet a day doesn't go by where people don't ask you at least something about it in there. I mean, it's just incredible that you were in the cauldron and experienced all that, and obviously had your iconic moment, which we'll come on to and talk about properly in a minute. But I mean, look, did you know you had the gloves going into that series? I don't know how it all worked from your perspective. Did you just kind of go into it? You seem like you're just sort of enjoying the ride at this point, by the way. You're just going along with it. Yeah, I'll play in the Ashes. Yeah, no worries. But there must have been some kind of nerves or perspective, especially particularly having grown up and spent a lot of time in Australia as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And all the, the history, you know, watching it and knowing how long it had been since England had won, the side that the Aussies were bringing over. You still have the selection, but I pretty much knew because we'd been to South Africa and had an incredible series win over there. I'd done my usual. I'd had a bit of a topsy-turvy tour. I'd scored some runs and, you know, had done some good things, and that's sort of pretty much how I judge myself, is did I contribute to the team? And that's where Duncan Fletcher went with me, because he just liked my approach and he liked my what I brought to the team. And so I was really lucky there that personality was picked as much as skills. And because Fletcher was building up for 2005, that was his thing. He was picking a team that he felt could take on those Aussie legends, and I fitted into that really well. But still massive, isn't it? An Ashes test series, with a legend of a team, and us who had been building up, unbelievable. You know, we'd won all seven tests the summer before. We'd gone to South Africa. We'd won that series. So everything was building up, and that's why all the, you know, everyone was so up for the series, and we had incredible self-belief going into it as well.
I can imagine. I mean, you know, we absolutely loved it. I mean, we'd love to talk about this. I think we've had like six or seven of you now on this podcast from the 05 series. I could listen to it all day. So good.
I think every cricket fan of the last 25 years could talk about 05 Ashes for weeks and weeks. Are you bored of talking about it, Geraint, or is that just not possible?
No, I don't. It's all I did. I've got to keep talking about it.
Come off it. We're not having that.
But we're all finished now, aren't we? With Belly finishing this week. That's it.
Was he the last of the gang?
He was, yeah. So the rest of us are retired. He was the last one to still be playing. So once he's done, it is a bit of a end of an era. Makes me feel a bit old. But, yeah, of course I love talking about it. It was an incredible few months. And
was your life the same afterwards? Or was that it? Changed your life, that series?
I never thought when I sort of started playing cricket that I'd be in a HMV signing DVDs, to be honest. And so
I love that.
It did. Yeah, of course it changed. It was, I was a bit, I was still me in a way, because I'd still go into the shops and I'd be just bumbling along, pushing the trolley, and my wife would say, "That guy's been following us for four aisles." And I'd be like, "Hello, mate, how you doing?" And that was, yeah. So I spent my time with either a helmet on or glasses and a hat. So I actually, felt anywhere near as recognisable as the other guys. So, like Freddie, Harmy, Simon, these guys, because I was in disguise for a lot of it. And so when I went out, it allowed me to sort of go about my business fairly well.
Yeah. And KP as well on his first tour, because, I mean, that must have been incredible, especially then watching him sort of flourish after that. But when he came in, I mean, he probably seemed in his sort of best spell for him to come in really into that side when he didn't have all the sort of problems and baggage that came with it. And he was a junior member of the side, wasn't he? But what was he like when he came in? Because he seemed to breathe a bit of fresh sort of air into it, really, didn't he? And obviously he dominated in that ODI series just prior to the Ashes that everyone forgets about. But he, what was he like in the dressing room? What kind of a presence did you find KP to be?
Hungry, because he'd had to wait his time. But incredibly focused. He was, he put probably the most preparation in that out of anyone. And that's the thing. He was a genius because of what he did sort of behind the scenes and, looking at bowlers, working out how they potentially might bowl to him. He was super fit. And then he'd come on that South African one day series. I think he got 300s or 400s out of seven.
Yeah.
That for him is by coming in and starting off his career, his international career in South Africa, where he'd left to come over, to deal with that we huge amount of respect, by doing that. And it just showed what he was about. And so we knew that he was ready to play the Ashes. And, so when he was selected, it was it was the right call. But Kev, he's a confident guy, isn't he? He was true to himself. I remember seeing when I was playing for Kent. I remember being in Pitcher and Piano in Nottingham. Is that what they were called?
Yeah.
And Kev was in there and he was confident. He had ridiculous gears on, but it was him from the moment one, and he never changed that. And that's the one thing he had an idea of where he wanted to get to. What he wanted out of cricket, and he worked bloody hard to get there. So yeah, he had ridiculous haircuts, and he came in talking to us about, do we want our teeth done? I've got a dentist, so I can, what sort of watch have you got, guys? For me, with my plastic thing from Bangladesh, that was no use. he brought a different element in, because like I was talking earlier about NASA, Thorpey. These guys, they did a lot off the field, but they didn't really talk about it. Whereas Kev brought that media side of it and all that PR. He brought that into the dressing room, because that was just him being natural, and it that's changed a bit. And that's what I felt changed about that dressing room. Not in a bad way, but just that, again, that transition going from the old school where they didn't talk about off-field stuff in terms of who, what paper and what they got paid, whereas Kev was just upfront about it, and he was off doing this and that, and that's just the way he operated. But underneath it all was an incredibly steely determination to be the best.
Yeah, Brooksy, you know when we talk about Harmy's delivery, that, I mean, you know the one. What would you describe that delivery as, the one that ends up going down the leg side that gets gloved to our good friend Geraint here?
Yeah, it's funny to say that, because that little bit of commentary that goes with it as well, me and a couple of friends from home, because I was glued to the TV that summer, way before I turned pro. I was still playing village cricket back then. But we used to always just shout, Jones, Bowden, Kasperwich, to each other all the time.
Yeah.
It's just a naughty little burgle, isn't it? And it's obviously what Jones is going to be living off that for the rest of his life. And that clip's probably been shown about a million times. And it probably made the series and the match even more lively, because it got so close, didn't it? But you get a little bit of luck like that.
Yeah.
But I'm sure Jonesy can elaborate on it a little bit. But...
Yeah. Geraint, just tell us about that
delivery. Catch.
The catch, you know, the catch. The one that you talk about probably three or four times a week.
After dinner career sorted.
Yeah. It's been embellished. It is now the biggest flying one-handed sort of... but in reality, it was, fairly straightforward. Didn't have that much pace on it. But what it did have was a huge amount of... meaning's the wrong word, but yeah. It had a low. If I dropped that, we wouldn't have
pressure.
5-0. Yeah, exactly. I've been down the M4 pretty quick. But that whole morning, we thought, oh, no chance, it's going to wrap up. But then, I talk about the morning walking out, all the Aussie fanatics in the canary yellow t-shirts.
The pathetics, we call them, right?
there was a group of them all pitched together, and they started singing out how many runs they needed to win. And they were doing that as we walked on the pitch that morning, and something just sat with me, and I thought, oh, don't like the sound of that. And then, of course, as it got lower and lower, different things happened throughout the morning where Harmy bowled one which bounced out the footholes down leg side and went over my head, and that the Aussie crowd loved that, and so much, all those little things going on, but then it got down to that final moment, but throughout all that final stuff, I still felt there'd be one chance to come, even after Simon spilt that really tough chance. I still felt we were going to still get an opportunity, and more than likely after the way the first test at Lords had been, where I spilt a couple of catches, it was going to come my way. So I was still focused and ready and actually wanting a catch to come my way. And so when it did, and that ball, sort of come off, bounce up, gloves, all that sort of is slow motion where I can see it moving in the gloves, and then that rolling and waiting for Billy's crooked finger to come up. that's all really clear, but just so much. It's some strange. So Warnie, what's he doing kicking his stumps? How?
Yeah.
It's just
what is that? Tell me where those gloves are, Geraint. Tell me they're in a museum somewhere.
No, I think they're either in my front room or they're in the loft. They're I'm not a massive displayer of memorabilia. The one thing that still breaks me to this day is I haven't got the ball, because at the end of the match, Brooks, as a cricketer, what at the end of the match, the umpire generally asks for the ball, don't they?
Yeah.
So I just lobbed it to Billy. Billy asked for it.
Your pocket ran off you.
But what I didn't realise, he wanted it for his collection.
He's got a big collection, hasn't he, of all these match balls and stuff, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Was he?
Yeah.
And so I remember getting a phone call on the golf course in between from John Carr, who was heading out the ECB back then. And he said, because I might have mentioned it, and he said, oh, the cricket ball, we're sort of trying to track it down. And I said, well, Billy's got it. And they went, yeah, okay, but we're going to get it. But basically, Edgbaston want to have it in their museum for a year. And then after a year, we'll give it to you. And so I was like, yeah, perfect. No problem. But I've never seen it.
Never seen it.
Yeah. I reckon it's down in New Zealand somewhere under Billy's mattress.
Well, I hope he doesn't sleep very well.
Yeah. You were the one who bloody caught
start it. A petition.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Grant,
we should start a petition to get Jonesy and the ball reunited.
That'd be good.
The power of the fans and social media, anything's possible.
How are you going to brand that up, though, Brooksy? You know, it's a bit delicate. Bring Jonesy's balls back. You know,
Jonesy wants his ball back. He's got to go and knock on the neighbour's door and go and get it back.
Jonesy wants his balls back. Hashtag that, listeners. Get that going. Get that trend.
I agree. I agree. Works great, that, doesn't it? Brilliant.
Very good. Geraint, obviously, a big part of that tour and a lot of your touring life with England will have been the Barmy Army. It's the Barmy Army podcast, My Livelihood. What was that like when you first played in front of the Barmy Army and you first heard the songs and you heard the atmosphere? And was it special or can you remember it?
Yeah, nuts. What you guys do is amazing. You know, it's to think, obviously I went to Bangladesh first off and you know, you look around and there's a load of English supporters just having a ball. And that's what strikes me most about is how much enjoyment from watching and travelling around the game of cricket that the Barmy Army get for it. And so that's real cricket love and passion. And that's essentially what comes across to me with the Barmy Army. Every tour I went, they were there. Apart from obviously at home, you do sort of miss it at home. And it's a bit weird when you're playing home test series and it's, you know, you go away and you have such sort of constant support all throughout the day. And it does make a difference because they're cricket fans and they've got cricket knowledge, they can move with the day and the way that the day, you know, if you're getting some wickets, they're going mental. And, you know, so as players, you're thinking, right, okay, let's keep pushing, And then if it's a bit slow and there's a partnership, all of a sudden, you know, there's a song come out that, you know, for wicket. And so they really help with the play of the day, in my opinion, to add to it. And especially as a team away, you know, when you're getting that support and understanding that where the game's at, it's I loved it. But just incredible set of fans. And when I went to the West Indies and just to see how many were packed into the rickety old stands.
Yeah. You
know, in Australia, when in that Ashes 06-07, which we try not to talk about, but I remember having to after we played. Well, we're playing in Perth, and Barmy Army takes over a pub generally, don't you?
Yeah, we do indeed.
Yeah. Well, after a day's play, I had to go fish my wife out and a mate of mine out of the pub. You know, walking into Barmy Army HQ after being smacked around the place. In the middle of a test match, I was about to bag a pair. I was like, "Oh," but yes.
I'm sure you will have been well received, though. No,
I was. Yeah, that's it. And that's what's great about it. And it's also having grown up in Australia, and it's quite fun watching the Barmy Army go about the way they do, and then watching the Aussies get so wound up because not understanding how much fun they're having, and they can't cope with it, can they? They can't hack it, the exactly. English humour. And so I know that, you know, that the Barmy Army are having a laugh, and just the Aussie crowd just not understanding, just because that's my youth going to cricket and just watching the Aussies abuse opposition, and then but then if it's ever turned around on them, not knowing what to do. So it was you know, all those little things. Love watching the Barmy Army do.
That's quality.
Amazing.
You should come on tour, Jonesy. If Millard, I'm sure Millard could get you on a tour at some point.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, I'll give you my headmaster's email, and we'll send in a request.
I was going to say you'd have to schedule the time off now, wouldn't you? In your current role.
Yes. I know things have changed, haven't they? Moved on. So out of having fun into the reality of a real job. So I'm really lucky. I'm doing something I love doing, and I've been able to move into that pretty seamlessly.
Yeah. So talk about what it is that you do now. I mean, look, we'll talk about Papua New Guinea at the end because that's really interesting. But just talk about what is it that you're up to now. So fire service. So you're on call at the moment. So I'm actually really grateful that the phone's not rung and you've had to dash out and be a hero.
Yeah,
but
I've got my beeper here. So starts going mental. I'll exit stage left.
Bye.
Amazing.
So that's a small part of it. My main job is I work in a school in Ramsgate called St. Lawrence College. And I've got three sort of different roles. I suppose my main job is I'm a housemaster for all the day students that come in. So thankfully they go home at night. I get to wave them off and, after they've done my head in all day. So it's, I love that. But it's like a massive dressing room. 50 teenage boys piling in and just listening to it and having to sort out what's going on over there. And so I love that part of it. So that's sort of one hat. Second hat is I teach some business studies. So I've got GCSE, doing a BTEC and a bit of finance as well. And then I'm a part of the games department. So I had 17 of them in the sports hall today, doing some basketball with just me and a whistle.
A lot of fun.
That sounds great.
Not so sure after an hour and a half of that today, but
amazing
quality. Yeah, so
that's the day job.
Do a lot of these students know about the 05 series and what a legend you are in the game?
I bet a lot of them weren't born, were they? That's slightly scary.
Hopefully I've inspired a few to be born.
Have you got any little grinds in the class?
No. There's a few, some do, the old ones. Yeah, there's a few cricketers there. But the ones coming through, not Scooby.
Amazing.
That's all right. I don't mind that.
Yeah, that's quite cool.
Is there a job you haven't done, Ken?
What you got in mind? Well, I'm trying to think. No.
You sound like you've got. You're like a jack of all trades, really. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, qualified in none, though, Brooksy. That's the trouble. hopefully that's changing. I mean, my last few months of an online degree in sport and business management. So hopefully by Christmas I'll be able to wear one of those gowns and a hat and throw it in the air, and I'll be no longer uneducated.
So you'll have a degree and an MBA. Is that right?
Yeah.
Very good. Very good.
Love that.
Yeah, they can. MBA, fast, like both it. Of them can go in the bedside drawer where the MBE is.
Soon to be cricket ball from the Ashes series.
Correct.
That'll get pride of place.
The MBE stays under the bed. Yeah, I love that.
Hashtag bring back Jones.
These balls, absolutely. It's catching on. So you know, just to round things off, you know what I love about this is that you quite clearly still love your cricket, because, you know, a few years ago when you've played 400 and odd top level games, 34 tests for England, an Ashes urn, and then you go and play some ODIs for Papua New Guinea. I mean, that must have been great. And you did that purely for the love of it as well, didn't you? I'm guessing.
Yeah. It was an opportunity that came up that PNG got in contact with me, and, you know, I had to wait 4 years after my last test match. And it was something that was brought sort of onto my radar when I was still playing the right back end of it. But it was just a chance to do that and extend that career a bit. But it was amazing. Loved it. You know, it really rejuvenated me at the back end of my sort of county career, because I went away with these guys who, some of them, their houses didn't have electricity, didn't have running water. I remember once when I went there for a training camp, and I went down, they all lived in a pretty much in the one village, which was down by the water. And so the way it worked is, as you as you sort of earned respect in the community and you got a bit of money, you're able to move from a house that was actually on stilts in the water, as you, and you could come in closer to land, and then you're able to get up the hillside as you, you know, as you got older and you gained that community respect. And that a few of my guys were still living in the water and, you know, slap holes in the floor so stuff would drop through, and, you know, just listening to them. And I remember playing a game of street cricket with them, and I was having a bat, and I clipped one towards one of the houses, and there was an open lid on this box and stuff, and it went in there, and they just went mad. I was like, what's off they went diving in there, and turns out there was a pig in there.
No way.
They kept pigs for ceremonies, and, you know, so it would become a feast. And so if the ball went in there and the pig ate it and choked or something, it was more important that the pig survived. But, you know, so it was little bits like that were, you know, which were just to be incredible. Part of those guys and going away with tour on them. I went to, you know, one of my first trips was to Dubai with them to try and qualify for a World Cup. And, you know, and at that point they weren't getting paid. We were just getting a bit of expense money, and it, you know, in Dubai it doesn't go very far. So I sort of had a chat with them and said, lads, if you all pull together, you'll get, you know, and then we head off to KFC. We'll be able to get so much KFC, it'll be ridiculous. And they were like, oh yeah, because they were just going and buy it individually. And I said, well, pull your money, lads. You'll get triple the amount. And then I got the hook from the manager and went, do you mind not giving them that sort of advice?
Amazing.
That's fantastic. What a great experience, though, that is. It must have been brilliant, that, because it's completely different, you know, completely out of the realms of, you know, what we see over here in terms of county cricket and stuff, but it's all sort of bonding over the same game.
And where it rejuvenated me was the love for the game, just the raw, like, you know, they're amazing. They were in Dubai playing, and so that whole thing of why I started playing again, and even though I'd been on this amazing journey, was really brought back to me as to where it all starts, and to watch these guys playing with such energy and love for the game. It was, like I said, it really rejuvenated me and gave me a massive boost towards the back end.
Brilliant. Geraint, thank you so much. Go
how
on.
Did you get... Sorry, Greggy. I'm intrigued by this.
It's amazing.
How did it all unfold, and how did you get on? How have those guys developed now? Are they still playing? Do you still keep an eye on them?
Yeah, and well, the brilliant thing, which I sort of brought a bit of a closure on it towards the back end, was that we got... we went to a tournament and we did so well that where we finished gave PNG full ODI status. And so to go from being number 16 in the world when I sort of, well, even probably less than that when I first started, to be able to get full ODI status, and what that meant with it, the funding, then that these guys were pretty much able to turn professional and train professionally. Wow. And to go off and effectively, and then the World Cricket League started, so they would go to Scotland, and so it just opened up so many doors for them. It for me, it was a sort of great finish point to be able to say, right, okay, now it's time for the, you know, I was the only sort of guy from outside of Papua New Guinea playing, and there were some young guys coming through, and I felt, well, I don't want to deny them the opportunities that are about to come up over the next 4 years. And so it was, That's what put my thinking towards it. I didn't want to just, a bit like with my county career, I still had another year on my contract, but because I was enjoying it so much at Gloucester, it really prompted me to finish, because I wanted to finish loving what I was doing and not sort of hanging on to the game because I had to with no other options. And I was really lucky that in my career I won tournaments, you know, the Ashes, yeah, so I felt fulfilled, and I think that's probably, you know, not being derogatory, but a lot of county cricketers probably have their career and don't fulfil what they want to do as much, whereas I was able to do all that, and it allowed me to finish on incredible terms and still with a massive passion for the game. And I still play now. I still play for my local village. You know,
I
bowed out last week. I had to go back to school, and we were playing in the COVID Cup. So one of the guys had spoken to a few other local clubs, and so we got eight teams together. We played each other a couple of times, and so I got them through. We eight teams. We got through the quarter final, and now I said, "So lads, I've got to go back to work."
Keep them hanging.
Incredible.
Brilliant. I've actually played against Papua New Guinea before, but it was after your time, Jonesy. I think I played him on a pre-season tour friendly in Dubai or Abu Dhabi when I was at Yorkshire. They were a fantastic set of lads and very talented as well. I think they gave us a pretty good game from memory.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, their fielding was they're athletic. That's what they were renowned for. When I first joined them, it was they probably couldn't handle the fast bowling and the spin, but you watch them in the field and that's exactly what they like. And but then they loved it. They probably did. You hear them sing, Brooksy? Did they?
Yeah, I did actually. I was gonna say they had a lot of energy, and I do remember there being some singing even before or after. I don't remember what it was now.
Yeah, probably all the way through. I remember bus trips again with them when we're at those tournaments, we'd be on the way, and especially when we won, it was mental, but they loved it, up and down the bus, just dragging me up to join in. And but that's just the way that we'd walk to training with a big boombox on. They loved it. It was brilliant.
Incredible.
Fantastic.
What an amazing experience.
What great stuff. What a great way to sort of finish your career as well. Fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. Geraint, it's been brilliant. We've had an hour's chat with you. I don't know where the time's gone, but it's been brilliant. Such a good insight. So nice to hear that everything's fulfilled. And it'd be cool, Mr. Jones. It'd be great to walking into Mr. Jones being your housemaster, wouldn't it? Shame that none of them have a bloody clue who you are, but, there we go.
Yeah.
Great stuff. Well, hope.
So, cheers, guys. Really enjoyed it.
Really enjoyed that, mate. Cheers, thank you so much. Man.
Podcast Network.